Good morning, Kerry Saxby. Thank you for wishing us a great show 3 minutes ago. It's fantastic. Anyway, good morning to Emma Tinson. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thank you.
And good morning to Jessica Ward. How are you, Jessica?
I'm wonderful.
Excellent.
You.
There we are. It's all positive things from that point of view. On the programme today, we'll be finding out about Richard Fitzwilliam's movie choice for this week. The Rugby World Cup comes through. We might indeed ask the question, how far has Jessica Ward got with Ian Lennox's book?
Do you guys want to know the truth?
Well, Ian suggested last week you might have got another chapter read if that was his estimate. He didn't have any faith in you. We were shocked, were we not?
Yeah. No, I think you should save the big announcement for when Ian comes on.
Tragically,
yeah.
Jessica will be at a module thing. Yeah. I know, it's a tough call.
Okay, go on then. But you better
okay,
make it.
I've got some good news, guys. I finished the whole book.
Yay.
I know, it's hard to understand, really, isn't it?
But she's left it in the Isle of Man.
No, I didn't bring it here, but I've got it at my house, so I'll bring it on Wednesday. Well, so I definitely brought it back to the mainland.
I eased back, Emma, asking you about have you managed to watch The Truth Is Out There, but I thought, yeah, you see, there we are, you see, because
no.
I thought, no, we won't mention that in any way, shape or form. Anyway, it's weather forecast time. Highs 16 degrees centigrade, lows 9 degrees centigrade, a mixture of sunny periods and a few light showers.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Paperback writer.
Rice and Emma Tinson, our regular co-presenters, were still recovering from the shock of hearing a 19-year-old student at the University of Teesside who'd never, ever written a letter in his life, which was astounding in all sorts of ways. But I thought, it's going to happen. And lo and behold, we have National Letter Writing Week now, with the 14th to the 18th of September. It's a way of hopefully addressing this factor. And to put a little bit more gloss on some of these astounding figures, etc., we're delighted to be able to welcome a true Renaissance woman. Yes, I use the term deliberately, because she's Blue Peter's finest presenter ever, really, from the summer of 2008 onwards, a 33rd presenter, a top row of television reporter, and probably ace letter writer as well. It's the fabulous Helen Skelton. How are you, Helen?
Thank you very much for that very kind introduction. And yes, I do like to write a good letter. I think I booked the trend with all my friends. I write letters to my auntie. She's slightly batty. She's lovely. She's so endearing. And she always sends me little notes and little letters. And it's brilliant, because without that, I wouldn't ever write letters.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because, you know, that purpose was actually raised insofar as, clearly, with all the tablets, mobile phones, technology that we actually have, you think, no, I'll just text speak, I'll just do something from that point of view. It's not quite the same, is it?
No, it isn't the same. I mean, the thing is, people don't write letters because they don't need to anymore. There's quicker and perchance easier ways of communicating with people. But I think it's really sad if we lose the skill of letter writing, because it is an art form. And, you know, it's lovely to... I have letters from years ago that people have sent me. I have a letter from my boss who bought himself a fancy fountain pen and a fancy piece of paper, and he wrote me a lovely heartfelt letter before I was going off on... It was when I was on Blue Peter, and I was going off to do a Children in Need appeal film to meet some very, very sick children in Sierra Leone. And he wrote me this letter, and I still have it. Now, had he said what he was saying to me in an email, I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't reminisce about it. It wouldn't tell me or my children in years to come anything about our relationship. But letters offer something different. And, you know, you're saying about that student, we can't criticise him for that, because this is the world we live in. You don't need to write letters. But I think it's nice to write letters, and it'll be a shame to lose that skill.
Well, this is very much part and parcel of the package. Now, you could be very sceptical and say, oh, well, yes, the Royal Mail would obviously be interested in terms of young letter writers and so on. But let's face it, as we've said, there's something special about that, and it also is a tangible evidence of, as you've just alluded to, Helen, you know, that kind of thing, that which you can use as a keepsake. And, of course, historians in future centuries can actually say, "Ah, oh, these are the letters of Helen Skelton, archived for posterity," and so on.
But no, but there are letters. I mean, where were we? I was with my husband, and we were looking at. We passed through an exhibition in a tourist information centre, and there was letters. And we were saying, "Do you know what? In years to come, I bet we don't. You know, things disintegrate, don't they? And you're not going to hold up a tablet with an email on it, but." There's a historical value, but aside from that, you actually need to write a letter. I mean, how to talk about the, you know, that's the sort of nostalgic side, but the crude side is half of employers are saying that they're having to improve the letter writing skills of their employees because people just can't do it. And we're from a generation where you did write letters, but people don't need to now, so they're never going to do it unless we encourage them to. And this is a sort of, it's a fun competition. We're encouraging children to write a letter describing their dream job. So it's a fun competition. It's for schools. When schools sign up, they'll get an educational resource pack. And then at the end of it all, there's £1,000 for the child who's written the best letter. There's £1,000 for the school who's got involved. So hopefully it's a nice way to encourage children to write letters. And hopefully it'll start them, you know, they might enjoy it. They'll, fingers crossed, they'll do it in years to come.
The research you mentioned there, Helen, by the University of Derby, as you rightly said, over half, or almost half, 48% of employers are forced to improve the writing skills of their workforce. That's from an employer workforce perspective. So it is quite a serious thing, and we talk about a post-literate society. Actually, you know, the fact of the matter is that if you haven't got those basic skills of being able to actually write, I mean, we still talk at the University of Lincoln with our journalists, even though they might balk at the idea of learning shorthand, it's an essential part of the course. Now, you don't have to do the letters in shorthand, which is possibly a blessing in disguise, but actually being able to actually compose things, think about that. Many writers actually still say that even in the age of technology, that they still have that magical moment when they're making up those ideas, when they're thinking things, putting pen to paper or even pencil to paper has a special connection.
Oh, absolutely. Well, if Dawn French writes all her books, doesn't she, out on pencil and paper. She doesn't type them, she writes them, because it's a lot more heartfelt and you've got to think about it. It's so easy. I know I'm writing some children's books, and I know I'll delete chunks and move chunks around, and it's a completely different process when you're writing on the computer to writing on a page. So I write out, and actually, FYI, the old shorthand, it's brilliant when you're doing shopping list.
Well, precisely.
I have shorthand scribbles for, you know, when I need things, when I want to write things.
We can forget T-line, we'll get skeleton line. That's going to be another stage forward.
I use it to write reminders to myself around the house that I don't want my husband to be able to read.
Well, there is that, of course.
Pick
but still.
Up that dress.
In terms of judges, obviously you're one of the triple triumvirate of fine folk, because former children's laureate Michael Rosen is part of this whole thing, plus, of course, the CEO of the Royal Mail, Moya Green. So a solid lineup there. Not too terrifying, but I think very informative. In terms of, we know we're going to get the right decision there. It's open to children up to the age of 14. And, of course, if they're saying, yes, but what's it all about? The question that the children have to respond to, as you rightly said, is, what's your dream job?
Exactly. So a letter just describing children's dream job, and it can be absolutely anything. There are no rules or no restrictions in that, so it can be, you know,
Blue Peter post-me- presenter, perhaps.
I suspect there might be one or two.
It's the thought. It's just away from that point of view. Dear Santa, make me a Blue Peter presenter. No, it's a different line.
I get a few of those as it is.
Well, there you go. And in terms of resource pack, the Royal Mail have actually produced a fabulous resource pack that people can actually access as well.
Yes, www.ichild.co.uk/Royal Mail. You'll get your resource pack and you can register there. Everything you need to know is in that pack. Hopefully, it's a fun thing for children to get involved in, and hopefully, we'll get some lovely letters at the end of it.
We're very much behind this at Siren FM and indeed Southside Broadcasting, so a solid push from that point of view. In terms of the dates and deadlines, clearly, obviously, this is the National Letter Writing Week is between the 14th and 18th of September, but as far as this competition is concerned, closing date is the 20th of November 2015. That's the 20th of November, and as you rightly said, the winners will be announced in early 2016, so it's going to be an interesting range of activities over the Christmas period, I suggest.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Be a nice one to judge, and as you mentioned, Michael Rosen, I mean, he is a legend in himself. He's a brilliant man to be around.
And in terms of length, etc., because I mean, clearly, if we go back to the days of traditional, I mean, I think of Cicero, for instance, you know, I mean, the ancient Roman philosopher produced acres and acres of letters and all sorts of things. Of course, we've got St. Paul, his letters to the Ephesians, and so on. In terms of that theme, what's your dream job? Are you kind of leaving it sort of open to where people actually will develop in terms of the style they take?
Absolutely. It's completely down to them to let their creative juices flow, to do whatever they want. I think the whole point of this is to whet the children's appetites for writing a letter. So we don't want to say at this stage, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do the other. We want them to engage with it, write that letter, and looking forward to seeing what they produce.
And just a minor point, but I'm just speaking for Nikki T here. Is it open just to people within the United Kingdom, or can folk who might be listening to this in Los Angeles or indeed Zimbabwe get in touch with us?
No, it's a UK competition.
I just wanted to clarify that. I thought, because I could hear our American correspondent saying, yes, well, I'm going to write the letter for that one.
UK. Well, they can get involved. They just might not be eligible to win.
There you go. You see, that's it. Fair, but, you know, true. That's the
harsh
key thing.
But fair.
Well, exactly. Classic line. Helen, it's been fantastic touching base with a good self to celebrate the first ever National Letter Writing Week. I'm sure there'll be many more, and to raise a number of key points there with respect to that. And again, this fabulous competition that's open to children up to the age of 14. A letter written in response to the question, what's your dream job? We've got two final questions for you, good self. Helen, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the midweek drive today?
I've had more above reasonably interesting. I've had a lovely time. Thank you for your time.
That's always critical. And the second one is, can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again, possibly to actually announce the winners or do a sort of retrospective on the whole
thing? Yeah, of
course
you can. That would be brilliant. Yeah, thank you for your support.
So what was the last letter that you wrote, Jessica Ward?
This letter?
Yes, the letter, as a physical letter. As opposed to an email or an e-correspondence and so on.
Are you talking like a specific letter that I've written?
Just any letter.
I don't know. I write emails at the time, but,
yeah, but
letters.
Last letter?
Last letter.
You have some probably, time in your
I
life.
I did it last year because one of my friends from the Isle of Man wrote to me, and so I sent one back.
That's
lovely.
Good. Exactly. Outstanding. Richard Fitzwilliam, of course, doesn't believe in letter writing. It's all telepathy, isn't that right, Richard?
Oh, absolutely. Telepathy only. You're quite right. No, in fact, letter writing, it is an art, and I do very, very occasionally, but I mean it's so rare these days. It is, of course, a lengthy email that takes the place of what
precisely
used to be a letter.
Even if it's only why Netflix is killing cinema. But that was a couple of weeks ago.
Topic not to be mocked.
I know. As if I would do that. I mean, that's as crazy as putting Emma Thompson, Nick Nolte, and Robert Redford in the same movie together and expecting them to have a walk in the woods. Unbelievable.
Yes, don't go for a walk in the woods with them, I'm afraid. I'm afraid. It's a great pity, you know, because I mean, I'm very, very fond, for obvious reasons, of Robert Redford and Nick Nolte. But let's be absolutely clear about this movie. Sometimes even top stars take self-indulgent rambles and can quap peace.
But, Richard, it's meant to be a self-indulgent ramble.
Yes,
it's a walk in the woods.
It could be in the woods, and it could be entertaining. And, indeed, Redford plays Bill Bryson, a well-known, successful author. He lives in New Hampshire, and after attending a funeral where he meditates somewhat, he takes a little bit of a stroll on the Appalachian Trail. And despite his wife, rather worrying, wife played by Emma Thompson, decides, no, I'm going to walk the whole length of it. She has one specification. He must find a friend who will go with him. He isn't that young. When it's Stephen Katz, played by Nick Nolte, who can just about stagger when they first meet him, when he arrives, well, it's pretty grueling. And, it is a tough task. But the problem with this film is we've seen it before, heaven's sakes. I mean, Into the Wild, a wilder movie with Reese Witherspoon, which genuinely did involve. I mean, these sort of road movies can be absorbing. Heaven knows, we think of Sideways, we think of a large number that can work. In this case, when you've got a script which really isn't that funny, when again they were going to meet all sorts of quirky characters in the woods, and indeed chatter and joke, and it becomes self-indulgently tedious. And I do have to say that be prepared, this is not a particularly good movie. If you're especially fond of Redford and Nolte, see movies where they were really good.
But the scenery looks wonderful. Anyway, Emma, what do you make of what you'd be looking at? A Walk in the Woods, based, of course, on the truth story. A genuine author, Bill Bryson, wrote Notes from a Small Country, of which our very own Jersey correspondent kind of borrowed the title Notes of a Very Small Island. But your thoughts on A Walk in the Woods?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it kind of seems like the kind of comedy that maybe my parents and that kind of age group would like a bit more than us.
Yes, I must say, I fear it creaks, and it creaks badly. Usually, yes, there are some very good visuals. You can hardly avoid that, given the fact they're in the woods, and sometimes they look from the next bunch of trees and vistas
there
beyond.
There are bears. There are bears in the woods and in the Appalachians. Beware the bears.
Beware the boys. The pity the bear didn't write the script. Oh, perhaps it could have been better. You know,
good grief, the comedian's a bear. No, he's a nut. He's a wearing a necktie. It's an old Fozzie Bear joke.
I mean, it's a pity, but quite honestly, if you sit through what becomes rather, it's a prolonged ramble. It really doesn't get anywhere. And quite honestly, I wasn't familiar personally with Bill Bryson. And if you are fond of his, the travel books and so forth, you may get more out of it than I did, but I have to say that I remember Redford so fondly. Think back, this is not something you should be particularly proud of. Somebody who's done so much for movies, incidentally, and let's just give a special nod to his
Captain America the Winter Soldier.
So on. I mean, oh well, a marvellous actor, but no, not here. The only time I ever saw him, I have to say, was at the London premiere of Lions for Lambs, and that also was not a movie that worked. It wasn't a movie to be proud of, but it was a movie that failed. This, well, I mean, he doesn't really get off the ground, quite honestly. Nick Nolte staggers around amiably enough, I suppose. But they've both done so much better. This is just a waste. The odd visual, well, yes, I suppose so. But, I mean, we've had so many of the sort of movies. And if you see Reese Witherspoon and you see a movie which really does have integrity, where she finds herself in the journey of Wild, then this disappears as far
Richard,
as I'm
Richard,
concerned.
Richard, you've made your point.
Perhaps it would be buried in the
It's okay. You're not on the Jeremy Vine show now talking about Labour leaders for shoes, so just step away. Step away from the
behaviour
battle.
Behaviour of Labour leaders are deplorable.
Lord above. Let's bear in mind it's all to do with life. Life, a difficult concept, as indeed the magazine was. A superlative magazine, particularly when you're assigned to shoot pictures of James Dean.
Indeed, I have to say that Life is a rather remarkable movie. It's also directed by Anton Corbijn. Now, anyone thinking it's about James Dean's life, he's played by Dan DeHaan and played superbly. And in fact, the reason for seeing this movie is to see DeHaan's performance and also some rather remarkable 50s period colour. Very, very interesting. I have to mention, just very, very fleetingly, that I've seen a movie called Brooklyn. It is also set in the 50s. We're going to hear more of it because it has Cesar Renan. And also it will have, definitely have, an Oscar nomination. She will have for that performance. And to see two 50s movies in one week is actually quite unusual. But Anton Corbijn, remember his famous take on Bob Dylan? I mean, there's no doubt a very, very unconventional director. What's interesting about this movie, but also its weakness, is that James Dean had so short a career. This was during his meteoric rise, and Robert Pattinson plays a photographer who is desperate to make ends meet. He leaves what passes for his home. He has a child. His commitments, however, are to his job. He's ambitious. Can he get sufficient photographs of James Dean, who isn't that well known, before East of Eden? Dean's next movie is about to open, and will life be interested in
them? It's just like a rebel without a cause, really.
A rebel without a cause is just about to metamorphose into Dean's career, with which, of course, ends so tragically. We don't go there. There is a problem with this movie, two problems, actually. There's DeHaan's extraordinary performance as Dean. Again, think Oscar nominations. And I was very, very impressed with him, and I have to say that he's definitely totally credible, but it's an extremely touching performance. And when he talks about taking his dead mother back to Indiana to be buried, I mean, that scene alone, the way he plays the scene, the way he reminisces, it's worth seeing the film for just that. But I do have to warn those who may find Robert Pattinson, it's rather the what I call the...
Our Pats from Twilight.
I have to warn those who... It's what I call the Kirk Douglas, Romain Duris, Robert Pattinson difficulty, problem or whatever. Endless close-ups. he is, the camera keeps caressing him.
Oh dear.
And I do wish we had...
We had caressing with Ken Dodd last night. I can't go any more on this on morning. I mean,
it has to be said, it just has to be said that I am not Patterson's greatest admirer. His performance as the photographer is indeed adequate.
But adequate.
It's Hahn who I wanted to watch, not him. And I think it's... there is an ego involved there. I mean, it's got to be frank. And the other thing is that this is a movie about a pivotal aspect of both their careers. It's not a dramatic movie. And anyone who sees it is going to be obviously interested, especially in James Dean, obviously, and also in the period. Whether it would be... whether it will have an appeal to a wider audience remains to be seen, for all the period excellence, for all the superlative performance that Dahan gives. Whether people still remember the legend that was James Dean, and I do have to be honest here, I've only seen Giant of all his top movies.
Well, let's, Richard, let's test that with our two wonderful midweek drivettes at present. Jessica, James Dean.
I don't actually know too much about James Dean, so I don't know about the film. I don't know if I'd go out and add my time and watch it, but it's interesting enough. I just feel like it's very slow-paced.
Emma Tinson, James Dean.
Yeah, I have, like, 0% knowledge about James Dean, but, I mean, it looks like an interesting film. I have to say, I'm not really a Robert Pattinson fan either. I've only seen him in Harry Potter and...
Twilight.
No, I didn't bother watching Twilight. So, yeah, so I'm not sure, but it seems interesting, like an interesting way to look at a person's life through a relationship with a photographer. So
it's something that hasn't been done.
It is. It's a movie that it just needs... there is a lack of intensity, there is a lack of drama, simply because, although we're interested, obviously, in the way the photographer's career... well, will it take off at all? Will Dean cooperate? Will he be of interest and so on? But it's the way Anton Corbijn is a very, very unconventional director. And I have to say, I went with an actor to see this this movie, and he's also an author, and he was absolutely captivated by it. And the way the story was told, through the eyes of another, it was conveyed. But if you don't know who Dean is, chances are you probably won't go and see the movie. On the other hand, if the critics are particularly in favour of it...
clearly you're not, Richard.
I did think it very good. I wouldn't say that. I would say that Dahan was marvellous. Okay. And it is it's a real performance.
It's time to ask those crucial questions. First movies back of the autumn term, Jessica, either Life or A Walk in the Woods, would you go and see either, both or neither?
Oh, hard question. I think I'd probably be more likely to see Life.
Oh, well, yes, I have to say.
Richard, you cannot influence the midweek drivettes. Yeah. Emma?
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I think the other one looked a bit too much for an older audience.
And it was very cliché humour.
Yeah,
as well.
I think it looked a bit cheesy.
What's not to love about chronologically gifted people struggling to put a tent up with bears attacking? I mean, surely it's classic slapstick
humour. It's the
humor.
bear,
that's the thing. Farinelli and the King. Duke of York's Mark Rylance. Very briefly, squeeze it in, Richard.
Yes, in the 18th century, King Philip V of Spain is deeply ill and crippled with the Depression, and his queen, Isabella, who's a music fanatic, engages the celebrated castrati, Farinelli, poaching him from London, to use the healing power of music to revive the king, who moves the court to the country. And I have to say that this is a fascinating play. It's by Claire Van Kampen. She is the wife of Mark Rylance, who plays Philippe. And the device in this movie, the way we are introduced to music, also to the court and to its dreadful limitations and the effect it has, the king calls the Chamber of Horrors, and the fact that it is so beautiful to look at. It's exceptionally well written. It's a sensitive play about two individuals, Farinelli castrated at 10, the king, who is also in a deeply dysfunctional environment and born, of course, into one, forced to rule, and the way the healing power of music revives his spirits. It's It's one of those plays that I hope runs and runs. Do see it. It's marvellous, directed by John Dove, and let me just praise Mark Rylance. I could spend an entire...
But it's only on for 12 weeks, so you're going to have to run very quickly to actually get to the Duke of York's Theatre in London.
Yes, you probably are, but it's well worth...
Please.
Through endless woods to see. Believe me, it's beautiful to see. And also, just one little note, Rylance was so superb, of course, in Wolf Hall, and that was, as we all know, shot in candlelight. And here we have candles again, and when I visit Madrid, I mean, you see some of these magnificent backdrops.
Just to set the scene perfectly here, because I know that the sensitive listener in Lincoln would probably be concerned about this, there were no genuine castrations during Farinelli and the King.
What a thing to say.
Sometimes you don't know with these actors. I just want to say, look, dude, just don't go there. It's very important.
Oh, definitely do go there. It's terribly important.
There you go. Last two questions for Richard Fitzwilliams. Jessica.
Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, and I'm delighted we squeezed Farinelli and the King, the Duke of York, in, because those 12 weeks, it's pretty full. Remember, you can try to get in.
And will we be hearing from you next week?
Yes, when Walk of the Woods has been buried, I shall be there and talking about further movies.
Wonderful.
Further movies, further routines, a walk in the woods, life, it's black. That reading is certainly one of the simplest and most precious activities that human beings can engage in. And as a result of that, the Happy Readers campaign is doing splendid stuff in terms of putting books into the hands of families. A third of parents indeed say that their own busy lives and hectic family schedules often get in the way of being able to read to their children. And to address this, we're delighted to welcome a dynamic duo of literary genius from the National Literacy Trust, first and foremost, Abigail Moss. Good morning, Abigail. How are you?
Well, thank you.
And from McDonald's Happy Readers, the wonderful Steve Hill. How are you, Steve?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Abigail, if we can come to you first, this particular campaign, which seems absolutely wonderful, and again, you cannot underestimate the importance of a literate society in this world. What actually sort of emerged as a sort of thought for putting this whole campaign together in the first thing?
Well, the National Literacy Trust, which is a charity operating across the UK, talks to a lot of children and parents and practitioners every year. And one of the findings is that only one in seven children say that they don't own a book. They perceive they don't own a book. So that is a crucial factor in terms of them reading a lot, reading outside of school, and enjoying reading. So for us, for a charity, the link between enjoying reading and carrying on reading through your life and having good literacy levels when you grow up and you go into employment is absolutely key. So we are very keen not just to work with schools, we work with schools right across the country, but also to work with big businesses, to work with high street retailers and high street brands. And for us, McDonald's is absolutely the perfect partner, because we can get, through the Happy Reader promotion, we can get 14 million books into the hands of children and their families at a time when they're together and they're ready to talk about it and enjoy it and have fun together with those books. So the reach is amazing. Over the years, since 2013, we've actually distributed 22.8 million books to those children and those families. And that is really going to help in terms of increasing literacy levels right across the UK.
From the point of view of McDonald's, Steve, presumably it makes perfect sense. I mean, obviously, apart from being able to read the menus, but that's another thing entirely, this is a good way of actually showing how McDonald's can have a positive impact on the community.
Absolutely. So we did research with 3,000 parents, kids and grandparents And all of them told us how important reading was to them. We actually found about three quarters of mums, 20% of dads, and one in 10 grandparents read regularly to their kids. And a number of tactics that they're using to try and make reading as fun and as engaging as possible. So the research found funny voices, sound effects, and facial expressions were amongst the kind of key ways that that parents are trying to engage kids with reading. I've got four kids myself, actually, and all of those things I can guarantee are true. And Happy Readers is all about putting books in the hands of kids, but also making it as fun, engaging, and participative as possible. So, we've partnered with the National Literacy Trust and also with Penguin Books to release the 8 Roald Dahl books, which will be out in circulation over the next 6 weeks. And as Abigail said, we're going to be giving away 14 million of those books. And our restaurants are obviously very well placed at the heart of communities. We have a huge amount of families that are using our restaurants every day. So it's a great place for people to enjoy reading in a really fun way. And actually, one of the things that we're doing as part of this promotion is introducing an app to really extend the reading experience. So it's a voice recognition system that picks up on words which are well read in the stories that we have as part of the Roald Dahl promotion, and it brings up various sound effects and voices and visual effects that really make it as engaging as possible. So it's a fully immersive experience, and it's not just about an individual reading a book. It's the full family having fun together.
It's almost the classic consonant, really, when Roald meets Ronald. Indeed, from that perspective, which is worthwhile. Abigail, how can people find out more about this using the wonderful multifaceted World Wide Web and so on?
Well, the easiest way is to go into McDonald's and order a Happy Meal, because it's all there, including tips on reading and ways of making it fun. But using the World Wide Web, if you go to the Happy Studios site, which is part of Happy Readers, you can download the app, and all of the information is there too. So that's another route to find out.
Generally, sounds as though you're actually going for tremendous joys and happiness, not just in the meals, but also in the eating and the food and the literacy with respect to that. Although we wouldn't necessarily want to have children eating whilst reading. It's not a good habit. You know, we balance the whole thing through. Then again, 21st century. Abigail Moss from the National Literacy Trust and Steve Hill, obviously from McDonald's Happy Readers. Many thanks for your time. Take care, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Marvellous. Who would have thought it? Fast food and reading. It's astonishing, isn't it, Arthur? What happens in terms of literacy and such like?
It does. The trouble is, our attention span starts to diminish, you know.
Well,
and but you've only got to look at Harry Potter, so you know, there is stuff out there that people want to read, you know.
Exactly. Exactly, sir. Very fortunate today, Arthur, because not only do we have Emma Tenson, we also have Jessica Ward. Yes, they're both back with us today. They're all heading through their university careers, one heading to their third year, or into the third year, one into their second year of a journalism course. So fantastic stuff. But critical thing here, the next aspect, which I suspect Jessica is particularly looking forward to, match 12 of the Rugby World Cup at the stadium, Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park in London, of course. It's the might of Namibia taking on board New Zealand.
All Blacks, yeah.
Namibia versus New Zealand. I know, you can say England 35, Fiji 11. It wasn't a fine result from that point of view. You can actually say the shock result of Japan thrashing the might of South Africa. Second place, just below New Zealand. But how's the World Cup been for yourself, Arthur McKenzie?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought the Japan match was absolutely incredible. I read a little article that Johnny Wilkinson said his heart was beating right at the end. He couldn't stop his heart beating. I must admit, I had the same experience. I wanted Japan to win because they were so determined. Their tackling was so impressive. Their scrummaging was impressive.
And they won 34-32. If only they could have done it against Scotland, we would have been delighted.
Well, I think perhaps. But what they've done is they've shown that the potential is there. And let's face it, the people in the back, the people who've been training, the people who've been bringing them on, the British rugby players on there.
Mm. This is very true. Although I gather that the Japanese coach is Australian. But still, there we are.
Well, yeah.
But there's, you can always...
the former captain of England is also there.
Yeah, well, this is true. So, Jessica, I know you're a netball person, but are you following the World Cup? Is it a case of, no, I'm too busy with my university work?
Unfortunately, it is a case of that, but I'm hoping to watch the next New Zealand match and the one after. And I think they're versing Samoa, but I can't remember...
They are indeed in terms of the
8th, is it? Well,
yeah, that's. I mean, New Zealand have actually won the last 5 matches.
I know, we're just awesome, aren't we?
That sort of basis. It's actually 11 hours, 18 minutes, and 12 seconds before they actually kick off against Namibia at 8 o'clock this evening. So
wonderful.
Sort of key line from that point of view. And Emma?
I know nothing about rugby, I'm not going to lie. I find that members of my family are very keen beans on watching rugby. But I'm not really a fan. I will sit and watch it, but I'm going to stick to football on this one.
See, I'm opposite. I'm like that with football.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there we are. So what's life like in the McKenzie household, and have you been actually watching it jointly with Ian Lennox, or has it been a case of no McKenzie alone?
Yeah, I watched a couple of games with Ian, and I've also watched it with my wife. She, unfortunately, she winces every time they crash, you know, every time they headbutt. Of course, incredibly, there's been a programme on this week in Panorama about concussion and about the dangers of rugby, because these athletes are massive now, they're strong, yeah. The hits are mute, and I think it's something that we should be looking at, you know, as a society, that it is a dangerous game, and this concussion is having huge effects. They've done... a lot of work in America with the NFL, and apparently there's a lot of people later in life having problems with their brains, you know, the dementia and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's, the Panorama program was quite important, and I'm sort of looking at rugby in a different way now.
And of course, unlike American football, they don't even have any padding.
No, well, the scrum caps. Well, I mean, the scrum caps don't afford any padding. But what they're doing is they're wearing shoulder pads, etc. right now, which means they think they're invincible and they can go in even harder.
Georgia, of course, coming up for New Zealand in the not too distant future.
Georgia, that's it. Sorry,
classic line from there. But it just shows what could actually happen. Anything can. Quite literally, in the Rugby World Cup. So, Arthur, anything else you'd like to share with us in terms of life, the universe, and that stuff? You might actually, because Jessica has successfully, and this will shock Ian Lennox, because he's probably not listening, Jessica has successfully completed which particular Ian Lennox novel?
Gentlemen and Players.
Gentlemen and Players.
Yes, yes. Yes, sir. Listen, Ian Lennox is a very good writer. I mean, it's just a fantastic amount of research. In fact, sometimes I think he overwhelms himself with research. But I've read all of his books, and every one successive is improving, because what he's doing, he's cutting out the oven doubt. He's starting to get to the nitty-gritty more. He's a little bit flowery at times, you know.
We've always said he's a little bit flowery, really, every time. He's always sort of resented it slightly, I can't say.
Well, I've got to hand it to him. His research is absolutely impeccable, and... he really goes into his subjects. I know I'm going to speak to him shortly, but I've got a lot of time for Ian and his writing.
So, Jessica, you've heard the Maestro McKenzie there. I see that little alliteration there? So, the Maestro McKenzie. What did you make of Gentlemen and Players?
I see where he comes from when he says it's very knowledgeable. Although I didn't really like, I didn't absorb all the cricket kind of jargon, but
you're from New Zealand. It's not
I know, I know, but I could tell he had done a lot of research into it, and the personalities of the characters were really, really good and really easy to follow.
You got your upper class, you got your lower class, yeah. You got your class war there.
Even though it's been done a lot of times before, it was still very different, and I did really enjoy it. So well done, Ian.
So there we go, you see, it's crossing the generations, Arthur.
Absolutely.
You must be very proud of your boy, as we like to refer to
him. I am.
Emma, any questions or thoughts for Arthur McKenzie about life, the universe, and so on?
Of course, Arthur, I wanted to know if you've got any predictions for the future upcoming rugby games.
Like, for instance, I think New Zealand Tonga. That's good.
I think, to be honest with you, I think the England-Wales match is going to be a real bruising match this weekend. Mm. I think that both they're really going to head-to-head and they've brought in their big guns, haven't they, England, big hitters. But I think that at the end of the day, I think it's going to be New Zealand. They're very slow at getting started, New Zealand, and the other day they showed how rusty they were, but I tell you what, I still think they're the ones for the put the money on.
Well, there you have it. The shock sort of line from that perspective. Of course, England-Wales, as you rightly said, coming up on the 26th of September. Then, of course, England-Australia. Well, that should be a walkover. England-Uruguay. Sorry, Australian newbie might have been sort of tuned in. If he is, welcome, John. Nice to see you yesterday. Hopefully we'll see you again soon. I think you're sitting in with Teresa before too long. That's John Sawtell, who was with us last night on the show. Arthur, are you set and ready to actually wear your critical ear once again and listen to the musical choice, which I warn you, we found last night quite significant in all sorts of ways. It's like the last thing that will send off Jessica and Emma off to all sorts of things. It's Ward Davis with Jamie John singing Old War Out Cowboys. It's not a War Cowboys, it's not a Geordie thing, it's Old War Out Cowboys. Are you ready for this, Arthur?
Yeah, absolutely.
Last night I thought it was a bit of a downer. This morning, I just don't know. Arthur McKenzie, War Out Cowboys, old War Out Cowboys.
Well, I can just see Clint Eastwood hand in hand with Clyde the Orangutan. And this guy singing with his black Stetson at the old Bandola Free, the Spangles, you know. Yeah. I quite like it. I've heard it before, of course, and many other country western songs.
It's outrageous. I was going to use it with Ian, but I thought, no, it would depress him. You know, with Newcastle United's latest result, I thought, you know, at least with other sports, you know.
No wonder they're all miserable out there.
Yeah, well, it's a definite thought that we'll clearly need to replace Steve McLaren and Steve Black with yourself and Arthur. And Ian. Ian Lennox and Arthur McKenzie. Well, I'll put that to him in the second hour of the programme. So, Emma, you're back off to do some stuff.
Yes, some stuff indeed. Exactly. I'm going to have my long day at university, which I'm excited for, but I'm sure at the end of the day I will be very, very tired.
And also you're doing some journalism stuff as well, are you not, Jessica?
I am indeed. I'm doing online this morning, and then later on I'm doing some journalism skills.
See, it's all good. And that basically means it'll be the listener and myself as we guide through the next hour of the programme. But the last two questions too, Arthur McKenzie, need to be asked. So, Emma, would you like to do the business?
Of course. Arthur, have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, it's been very reasonable.
And will you join us again on the show sometime soon?
I hope so.
Fantastic.